You're listening to Critical Reads. This show is designed to help people critically analyze topics like race, culture, and faith, one resource at a time. I am your host, Neff Lesperance. Hi there, and welcome to another exciting episode of Critical Reads, the podcast. As the intro says, I am your host, Neff. Thank you so much for joining me on another episode of the show. I know it's been a while since I posted anything, and I know a few months ago I shared how I was hoping to come back, and so this is my attempt of hopefully getting back to some regular scheduled postings, but I guess we will see where we are with this. I know when I first started this podcast, I brought up in I think the first episode, or maybe I didn't, but it was just a thought that, you know, at the end of the day, I want this podcast to be something that I did for fun and when I could do it, mainly because I didn't want this to be something that drained me, something that I didn't enjoy anymore. And at the end of the day, this is something that I do for fun just so that I can, you know, give back to the community in a way that makes sense to me, in a way that I enjoy, in a way that gives me life, and hopefully in a way that will empower you all as my listeners or people that are interested in learning new things, just to kind of pick up a book and pick up different resources or try learning from different resources just for the sake of just growing as a person. And so I hope that this episode and the future episodes that I post can continue to be a resource that helps encourage you to do that. And so I'm excited to kind of, you know, hopefully get back into this and just empower you and encourage you, like I said, to do something different with your day and in with your life. And so one of the things that I wanted to do, I've wanted to do for a while now, is just do some resources kind of focused on mental health and focused a little bit on just learning a little bit more about the LGBTQ community. I do think mental health and just being mindful of what's going on with the queer community is such an important part of the conversation right now. I think as much as we don't want to admit it, a lot of us in this country are struggling with mental health issues, whether it's something that's extremely difficult and debilitating and requires medication and a full-on diagnosis, or if it's one of those things where, you know, you're having a hard time in the moment and you need somebody to help you or process things and help you move forward and get some extra help. So I think there's like a scale, obviously, which we will talk about a little bit today in the resource I'm choosing. And then on the other hand, you know, there's a lot of conversation right now about LGBTQ rights and a lot of transphobia, homophobia, and all these different things. So I think both of those topics right now, at least for me, are at the forefront of my mind, just trying to figure out how to help people learn more about themselves, grow, just become better humans and healthier humans, and then also figuring out a way to help a marginalized group right now and empower a marginalized group right now, because that is just where we are as a country. We are specifically targeting them. And so I know my heart and my interest has always fallen into anti-racism a little bit more, because that's just the, I guess, the body that I have or I embody right now as a cis woman who happens to be African American. So it's always been in my interest to talk about racism a little bit. But I think also just understanding that we are all complex individuals and it's important to know about all these other different issues as well is part of why I was like, hey, you know, I really want to make sure I'm even becoming more informed about what's going on in the LGBTQ community, because even though I don't officially identify with any particular of the sexual or gender identities, I still can recognize that everybody in that community deserves to be loved and protected for who they are and to be respected for who they are, and not just because they can conform to whatever our society thinks is acceptable or lovable or whatever. So that's kind of where I'm going to be at for the next few posts, just focusing on that. And like I did say in my last post, one of the things I'm trying to do too is try to, you know, add, sprinkle some fun books in here too. I think one of the things I'm recognizing more and more as I'm even, you know, working through my own mental health, balancing work and all these different things is the importance of adding material in here or adding material that I'm reading that can just be for the sake of like fun and enjoyment and not just like diving into really deep and intense stuff all the time. And so I think I'm going to try to figure out more and more how to add that in this podcast. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's not that I'm saying that we have to completely not learn about these hard books, because I know a few of the posts that I did, Medical Apartheid, Stand Your Ground, Without Sanctuary, there's a lot of books in here that I talked about that were just really, you know, steeped in a lot of heavy, heavy history. And it's, you know, it is important for us to know and understand what is going on in our society and how those books are important for us to read, especially in a time right now when everybody isn't kind of encouraging us to, you know, ban certain books and not talk about certain books. It's so important for us to know about these different resources. But I also, like I said, I think it's about a balance, because I even had to notice with myself reading all these anti-racism books, it got to the point where there are some days it would be hard for me to go to work, and I work in majority white spaces. So having to read about all these different lynchings and read about how all these different instances of racism have affected the Black diaspora as a whole, and then having to work with white people all the time, and especially ones that are not aware of how they're still contributing to the structure, that was kind of, you know, really difficult for me. And so I had to figure out how to find that balance. And the funny part is that one of the things I have to do sometimes is just watch or read books that does center white people, but in a way that's like more humane. So one of the things, if you know about me, is I really love watching Hallmark movies, and they're corny. Most of them are centered around white characters, but just watching like more wholesome stuff about white people has helped me. I don't know why it works, but I know it works. And so that's what I had to do for myself. So again, it's all about finding this balance. And that is one of the things that I think throughout my journey and throughout your journey, I would just encourage, like, how do you find that balance and make sure that you're not getting dragged from one point or the other in terms of being either really full of anger and hatred or like completely tapped out or maybe a little bit of both, right? So, yeah, so that's where I'm kind of at today. So as we pivot to actually bringing up the book that we are going to be talking about today, for my first book back, I decided to talk about this book that's entitled, Are You Okay? A Guide to Caring for Your Mental Health. And this book was created by an author that is named Katie Morton. She is an LMFT, so she's a licensed mental health family therapist or something like that. I think the fun part about my profession and just mental health profession as a whole is that there's a bunch of different titles and different things. But yes, she's an LMFT, so licensed marriage and family therapist. I had to make sure I gave you guys the right thing. And so this author is really, really interesting in that she started doing a lot of her work, you know, primarily like doing some YouTube videos, which I will explain more in the intro about her. But she did some YouTube videos to kind of talk more about mental health and different things like that. And through her work, she decided, let me write a book about this. So I'm really excited to do this book, because I know every time I read this, the title, I always crack up. It's like, are you okay? No, I'm not okay. And I think that is something that is important, though, for all of us to stop sometimes and ask, like, am I doing okay right now? Do I need some extra help? And so I think this book does a really good job of kind of breaking down, you know, recognizing at what point are you okay or not okay? How do you seek out the help, etc.? So before I dive deeper into how she does it, I'm going to read a little bit, like I do, about the author, And then I'm going to read a little bit about the book and what it is about, and then we'll kind of dive into the different pieces of it. So just a little introduction about the book from the blurb that she has for this book. She says, everyone struggles with mental health issues from time to time, but the greatest level of misunderstanding comes from knowing the difference between mental health, mental illness, figuring out whether we need professional help, and if so, how to find it. Are You Okay? Walks readers through the most commonly asked questions about mental health and the process of getting help. From finding the best therapist to navigating harmful and toxic relationships and everything in between, licensed family therapist and YouTube sensation Katie Morton clarifies and destigmatizes the struggles so many of us go through and encourages readers to reach out for help. What are the red flags of a mental health issue? How do you go about making the first therapy appointment? How do you know if your therapist is a good fit for you? What is the best ways of talking about mental health with your family, friends, and colleagues? There are so many questions and concerns in the down-to-earth, friendly tone that makes Katie Morton so popular on YouTube. Are You Okay? Informs us and reminds us that we can get through the difficult times and we are never alone. So that's a little bit about the book. And so about the author, I kind of went to her website, and she just shares a little bit about, she says, hi, I'm Katie. Even as a young girl growing up on a Christmas tree farm, I was completely fascinated by people. I wanted to explore their inner world and understand what made them tick. What I love most about my work is making mental health accessible, giving people permission to be open, and arming them with information that makes a difference. Whether sharing a YouTube video or speaking with the execs of a major corporation, my goal is to break down barriers, increase awareness, and share simple tools that fuel noticeable change. And then another part of the website also adds, meet Katie Morton, the powerhouse who is revolutionizing the world of mental health. As a licensed marriage and family therapist, author, speaker, and psychoeducation facilitator, Katie is a true force to be reckoned with a master's degree in clinical psychology from Pepperdine University. She built a thriving practice in Santa Monica before bringing her expertise to social media, where she has been a driving force in the mental health movement since 2011. With over 1 million subscribers and 100 million views on her YouTube channel, Katie is a passionate mental wellness advocate, demystifying mental health and eradicating stigmas with her powerful videos. She has also appeared on the top-rated shows such as Dr. Phil, E! News, CBS, The Doctors, and The Dr. Drew Show. And she also has been featured in Glamour UK, Europe's most highly circulated magazine. A 2019 Shorty Award finalist and a 2020 Streamy nominee, Katie is at the forefront of mental health education, inspiring a loyal community of engaged mental wellness ambassadors. Get ready to be empowered and inspired and educated by the one and only Katie Morton. So I gave you a lot of intros on this wonderful woman, but long story short is that Dr. Morton, or Miss Morton here, she has basically taken it upon herself to figure out ways to make the mental health profession and all the different aspects of getting help for your mental health a little bit more understandable and accessible to everybody. And I think, I'm not 100% sure what drew me to this book. I think first the title made me laugh, because I think the time that I saw this recommended for me on Audible and I saw, Are You Okay? My first reaction was no, because I'm not going to lie, the past few months have been a little rough for a bunch of different reasons. And so every time I would pass through this book, I wanted to say no and be petty and just like laugh it off. It was like my dark sense of humor. But as I have been working with my patients and as a mental health therapist myself, I wasn't very intrigued by this book because I recognized that Katie does a very good job of really breaking down the steps of, okay, what does it look like to struggle with mental illness? What does it look like to seek help? What does it look like to wrestle with insurance and try to figure out all the different practices? I know she's an LMFT, but there's psychiatrists, there's a clinical social worker. Like, there's just so many different labels and titles and different types of therapies and different things like that. And so I know for me, who is even in the field, sometimes my brain is like, oh, all these acronyms, all these different things. I have to keep going back to look for and understand, oh, what is this? What is that? Even for being reminded of what an LMFT was, I had to quickly look that up, right? And so if I'm struggling and I'm in this community, or I am a therapist myself, there's only so much I can imagine, like, how somebody who's not in this field might be struggling with the same things and being confused. And as a person who struggles with mental health issues, I know there are times for me when I am super depressed, the idea of having to take all of these extra steps just to seek out help can feel so debilitating. And not knowing where to go, not knowing who to talk to, not knowing what kind of therapy is available, all these different things can kind of make me freeze up, right? Or it would make me freeze up. So I like that in this book, she does a pretty good job of just helping break down the steps so that if you are in that position where you're like, I need help, you have somewhat of a guide to help you figure out where to go to, who to talk to, and even what steps might be necessary within the process. So obviously, after the title caught my attention, I did like the way that she also wrote this book, because she does it in a way that she's not using a bunch of big words. She's writing this to any kind of level of education, right? So you're really able to follow along. You're getting practical steps. And I think I'm a person that's really big on practical steps. Like, show me how to do this so I can do the next thing, right? So she does a really good job of giving practical steps and defining things even. Because I know in the back of the book, she does even offer a few appendixes. So she has like a glossary that helps define everything from like what it means to have certain mental illnesses, what certain therapies do. Like, so if you, for example, want to do cognitive behavioral therapy or EMDR that's used for trauma, she helps explain and define those things for you so you have a better understanding of what those things are. And she also offers a lot of resources in here to help you kind of have steps by step what to do to, you know, do your first appointment, all that other stuff. So that is one of the things that I really thought was great about this book. So when we talk about what she's covering, obviously mental health, and as far as her thesis, you know, Katie says, I wrote Are You Okay to be your guiding light through the process by explaining how to know when you need help and sharing different types of assistance available. I hope you leave feeling equipped with all the fundamental knowledge necessary to make a positive change in your life. To date, videos on my channel have been viewed over 27 million times. So know that whatever you are feeling or are worried about, you are not alone. Stigma and fear can only survive when kept secret. By talking more openly and honestly about mental health, we are shining a light, proving that it doesn't have to be so scary and that we all struggle sometimes. So work with me and shed some light on mental health to remind people it's nothing to be ashamed of, and let those around us know that there is help available. Hope is such a powerful thing. If we work together, we can ensure this conversation continues and the stigma associated with mental illness disappears for good. And so I love this thesis, or what she's arguing for in this book, because I know when I first began my mental health journey and I went to my first therapy appointment, I joked around at one point that, you know, those Kool-Aid commercials, the Kool-Aid dude just like runs through the door and he goes, oh yeah. And like, he just breaks through. Like, I wanted to bolt so badly outside of my session or like just being in the waiting room, I wanted to leave so badly that there was going to almost be a Kool-Aid type man or like a Neff size shape hole at the door because of how badly I just wanted to bolt. And so I know, like, you know, when I first initially started therapy, I think it was in around 2011. So it was like almost 12 years ago or about 12 years ago when I started therapy, I was terrified. I came from a family background where, you know, we're Haitian, we're immigrants, we're Black. We don't talk about shit outside of the home. You know, I think even there is this part of a stigma that talking about mental health sometimes was more of a white people thing. And we keep everything inside of the home. But I think very early, I learned, like, you know, keeping things inside of the home wasn't helping me. I knew that, you know, my parents loved me and cared about me. My family loved me and cared about me. But there was also a lot of things about the dynamic that was unhealthy. I didn't know how to name it at the time when I was a kid. But I just knew, like, I needed something outside of the home to help me be whole. And so very early on, I learned how to figure out how to have some mentors, how to talk about things. I was not very consistent with it all the time. And I didn't always know what to do, what to say, and things like that. But over time, things got easier. But yeah, like a big step of it was getting myself into therapy and being okay with that fact that I was in therapy, especially since there was a lot of fear and stigma and shame that came with acknowledging that I needed some extra help, right? So I think that's one of the things I really love about this book is that Katie really breaks down, like, these are some of the reasons you might need some help, and then just helping you feel normal about this process and even helping you see and acknowledge, like, the difficulties about the process and not feeling bad about it. So quickly, I want to touch a little bit on how does she do this? How does Katie do this, right? And so some of the ways that she does this is she very openly, which I thought was cool, is she shared some of her own personal experiences with going to therapy, seeking help for herself, recognizing that there was maybe some dynamics and things going on in her own personal life that she's like, hey, I need to go talk to somebody. Hey, I might need to, you know, consider medication. Whatever the case is, she shares a little bit about her own personal experiences. She also talks about some of the experiences of people that she's worked with, whether there are people that were following her on YouTube that shared their experiences, whether there are some of her patients. Obviously, she makes sure that these people gave permission to do so, but she makes sure she adds some of that. Then she does a good job of just adding some general statistics, general information about the field. And again, like I said, there's just so much to the aspect of the mental health field that is terrifying, debilitating, and just overall confusing sometimes. So I really appreciate that she takes her time to really explain all of these things to her readers. And she does it in a way that, you know, uses everyday language. So you do not have to feel overwhelmed and trying to, or even have a thesaurus near you to understand what she's saying. Because I know one of the funny things about going to grad school and, like, you know, sometimes reading some of these things I read for fun is that sometimes you're looking at these authors and you're like, who are you writing to? Like, who are you writing to? And I do understand that, you know, sometimes in the journals and the different things that we read as clinicians, I understand to some degree there's just some words you have to use because that's what we use in the field. But a lot of times these writers do not explain what they're using or what word they're using and why they're using those words. And then they also forget, like, if we want to try to help everybody as a whole understand our field or understand things that are going on within the, you know, our brains and all these different things, you have to be willing to break things down a little bit more so everybody can understand it. And so I think a lot of times it's almost like we're just talking to ourselves and talking to each other and forgetting how to bring that information down to an everyday level. And then we're like wondering at the same time, like, why aren't people like wanting to learn about this stuff? Why aren't people you know, more aware, but it's like, who are you talking to? Right. So I think that is something that I loved about this book, is that she does a good job of breaking it down in a way that makes sense and that everybody can read and understand. And it's actually a pretty quick read too. So that's awesome. So how she breaks this down is, first she talks about what is mental health, right? Chapter one, she breaks down what is mental health, what is mental illness, things that you should know before you get started. And I do think that that's such an important part, because I think even the word mental health sometimes is a barrier, and also mental illness sometimes is a barrier. I mean, I'll talk more about that a little bit, because that's one of the things I wanted to focus on in this podcast. But I recognize, even with my own patients, when I'm talking to them about mental health and mental illness, they have such a hard time just with that portion alone, that sometimes part of my sessions in the beginning is just helping them understand the difference and understand that everybody should be working on their mental health, right? And so that's something that I love, that Katie starts just with that. Like, let's break this down. Let's help you understand what it means first before we move on to the other part. Then in chapter two, she talks a little bit about why it can feel hard to get better. And so I do like this chapter that she brings that in as part of the conversation, because I do think there is sometimes this false idea that working on yourself is going to be easy, that working on yourself is, you know, it's supposed to be a quick process. But I think sometimes people are aware that it's going to be hard too, and that is why. But I think sometimes there's a sense of like, it's not going to be that hard too. So, but anyways, I do think it's good that she puts that on the table right away, says, hey, this is not going to be an easy process. This is going to be hard. It's going to stretch you. It's going to require some growth. However, on the other side of it, it's going to be okay, right? And so I do think that's such a big part of this, to have all that out in the open. And I know I do that with my patients too. I'm like, hey, like, this isn't going to be easy. There's going to be days where going to therapy is going to be good. It's going to feel rewarding. You're going to feel like you took a lot off your chest. Everything is great. And there's going to be days you leave therapy and you're like, what the fuck? What did we talk about? I feel worse in some way. Like, so it's just, I think this chapter kind of helps manage some of those expectations and help you understand where you're at, which is good. And so from there, she kind of goes through chapter three, talking a little bit about how do you know when you need help? What are some warning signs? What are some things you need to look for? What are some ways that you can start noticing that there might be some things you need to address, especially because she notes, like, we don't want it to get to the point where it's really, really bad and really debilitating and you can't, you know, jump get off of it, or like, you know, it gets to a place where it makes it harder for you to really engage with these systems, I should say. So she's trying to help prevent, like, do preventative measures. And it's okay if you're already at the point where you're like, I really just can't get out of bed or whatever it is. She's not saying that it's bad if you have let it get to that point, but she's saying, like, for all of us, if we're not at that point yet, if we're not at the point where our mental health issues are affecting our day-to-day living, but you're already noticing there might be a few signs, get out there, start doing it before it gets to the point where it's really, really affecting you. Right. And if it is really, really affecting you, she also notes it's okay to, you know, talks about mental health as a preventative measure as well as a way to just address the really tough things that are going on. So after that, she kind of starts breaking down a little bit more about the mental health professional. What does each person do? And again, like I said a few minutes ago, I enjoyed this chapter because even though I'm in the field, sometimes it can get confusing to think about who does what, right? The psychiatrist does meds. How many types of counselors, psychologists, like, what does everybody do? How do I know which one I need for what particular thing? And so I thought this was a great addition to the book, because I know as I've gotten further into my career, that's one of the things I've had to help have conversations with even my patients and even some of my friends that are seeking help. Being like, if they share certain things that are going on, I could be like, oh, hey, you have a lot of trauma going on. Maybe you should consider, you know, a therapist that does X, Y, and Z with trauma and are trauma informed. Maybe that they do a cognitive behavior therapy or dialectical therapy, whatever it is. I've learned a little bit more to be, you know, a little bit more versed, I guess, in all these different backgrounds as much as I can be, so I can direct my patients or my friends to, hey, look for this specific type of professional. Because I do recognize, like, as much as I'm like, yeah, I'm going to become a licensed clinical social worker and I know X, Y, Z, there's some holes in what I can do, right? And so pursuing somebody with another background sometimes can be more beneficial to my patient or my friend than me trying to offer up information that I don't really know about or try to help somebody in a way that I'm not familiar with, right? So for example, I think a lot of my work that I've been doing so far has been more so with depression and anxiety, right? So if I have a patient that has something going on with an eating disorder or really intense trauma, even though I can help address some things, at the end of the day, they're going to be better equipped to work with somebody that is really specialized in eating disorders or really specialized in trauma, because I don't want to be the person that like adds to their situation because I'm providing, you know, words or whatever that's triggering to them or that's really not going to be helpful or beneficial to their growth and to help them overcome their issues, right? So I think that's something that's really awesome that she does this. She really takes time to give you a general overview of all these different fields, all these different professions, and it allows you to decide a little bit more, okay, this is more so what I might need, this is not what I need. And I will say last thing about this is I've even noticed from my own personal professional experience that there's some ways that I look at therapy and what it looks like to empower people from a social work perspective that I have colleagues that are mental health counselors. They look at things in a different way. So I've been able to even learn from them and see things from a different way that I don't really see because of my background and my training, right? So, and it's not saying either one is right or wrong, right? I think both sides have different aspects to it that are really helpful for anybody that's trying to grow and learn, et cetera. But just recognizing like everybody might need a different lens. So there are some of my colleagues that are, you know, mental health counselors and they look at things in a certain lens that I think, hey, this is actually really helpful for my patient. And sometimes I may ask them for some feedback or something on that, right? So that's just something that I think is such a cool thing to acknowledge and just be honest about. And I even was like, hey, like as counselors, I think all of us should even be open to referring people and recognizing like, hey, even though I can continue to take your insurance money or continue to take your private pay or whatever the case is, I want to care about you as a client enough to be like, hey, I need to take a back seat and I need to refer you to the right person so that you can get the help that you need at the end of the day. And I think the cool thing is that that is one of the things that Katie herself has talked about doing in her own practice is sometimes she's worked with patients where she's like, hey, I need to refer you to XYZ because you need this more than you need to be meeting with me. And I know for me, that's the kind of therapist that I want to be as well. So from there, she talks a little bit about what is the best for me in terms of finding the right types of therapy, right? And so this is where she talks a little bit more about the certain types. So psychoanalysis, talk therapy or psychotherapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavior therapy, group therapy, family therapy, exposure therapy. We could be here all day, right? But she really goes through all the different types, talks a little bit more about, you know, what kind of mental health disorders or just mental health issues in general this can help address, right? And so I really enjoyed this chapter as well because it did make me think about some things. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that this was a thing, or it helped me kind of understand a little bit more about some of the therapies that I don't really do every day. I know I mostly work with doing cognitive behavioral therapy and dialectical behavioral therapy and group kind of therapy, but there's some other things in here that I was like, oh, I don't really always do this, but cool, it's here. So she kind of, again, helps break down all these different things. And I'm sure there's like some others that she didn't list, but she lists some of the main ones. And again, this provides the reader an opportunity to understand a little bit more about what are some things that you can seek out to help you with your mental health. After that, she talks a little bit more about preparing for your first appointment. So what are some questions to ask? What are some things you should expect? How do you know if you need to see more than one person? How do you know if it fits? Understanding some of the ethics and boundaries in therapy. I think this is really good for everybody to kind of breeze through as well, because I think a lot of times there's a lot of pressure to kind of figure out how long you should stay with a therapist. And when you recognize if it's not working or if it is working, what do you do? I think there's also, I know if you're a person, for example, like me, who can be somewhat of a people pleaser, having to figure out, oh God, how do I break up with this person if this isn't working and you feel bad about it, et cetera. So she helps really break down what are some red flags in your relationship with your therapist. What are some things you have to pay attention to? How do you know if it's a good therapist or a bad therapist, or like maybe not an effective therapist for you, I should say. And so, yeah, so she helps you kind of understand a little bit more of that, which I think is great. And then from there, she talks a little bit about, okay, if you are seeing a therapist for a while, when do you know if it's not a good fit or if it is a good fit, and kind of helping you understand some of that. I think this is also really cool because she talks a little bit about attachment. And again, this is where I know for me, it was important to think about just my attachment style and who I am as a person. Sometimes I feel bad having to say no or saying, hey, I need a certain thing or a boundary. So I think this stuff is, again, it was really helpful to read just to be reminded of like, it's okay to question whether or not something's working with your therapist and not to feel bad about it. And I know that's something right off the bat that I tell my patients, like, hey, don't feel bad if there's something on the treatment plan that we talked about and you're like, hey, I don't want to do this or this isn't working. I know in the treatment setting that I'm in, they can't always get a new therapist. But even if they're like, hey, we're not clicking, I don't take it personally. And I did have a patient that she was like, hey, we're not clicking. I don't take that personally, because I know sometimes you need specific things from your therapist to feel like it's working. And that's what's most important, right? You need to make sure that you and your therapist are kind of on the same page and that it's clicking for you. So that's most important. So I like that she, again, makes it normal to talk about this stuff and to think about this stuff, and so that people hopefully feel more empowered and don't feel bad about having to make these types of decisions. Okay. Last few chapters, she talks a little bit about communication, understanding what toxic relationships look like, common mistakes that you can kind of help avoid a little bit when it comes to working through some broken relationships at home, work, and life. So that was really cool. And then the last chapter, she talks a little bit about what does it look like if you are in therapy and some things aren't working, especially if you are seeing somebody once a week and you're recognizing this isn't helping me, something's not working. So she helps you kind of recognize a little bit more about, okay, what are some signs you may need some help? And more help may look like, hey, instead of just meeting with my therapist once a week, maybe I might have to consider doing some extra stuff. So I know she brings up IOP, which is intensive outpatient. So that usually means that you're going to groups maybe about 3 days a week, 2-3 days a week, and you're working on some extra things there. Another thing is PHP, where you might be doing it a few, like 5 days a week of groups and different things. So there's different programs that run to kind of help do more an inpatient or hospitalization type thing, where you're going to a facility for a certain period of time and you're getting some extra help. So these are some tips and tools that she like kind of, you know, helps you understand that are available. So if you're meeting with the therapist once a week and you're recognizing something is not working, you can kind of add that to your list of things to do or list of resources you can tap into. So after we get through all of the different chapters here, thank you for bearing with me for as I explain some of this. What I wanted to do is just touch on a few ideas that kind of stood out to me. So one of the things I decided about doing this book is I really do not want to spend too much time diving into a lot of the content, because I do think there's a lot of great stuff in this book that I would like you to actually get the book and try and learn about things for yourself, especially if you're at a place where you're like, I'm recognizing I'm not okay. I'm recognizing that I need some extra help. I'm recognizing that I'm not aware of what's available to me and I need some guidance. So I want you to actually get this book and figure out what you need for yourself and, you know, start the process. So like I said, I don't want to go too far into what she has in this book, but I wanted to just touch on a little bit about what stood out. But I did want to touch on a little bit about what stood out to me. And so first, I really love that, like I said, in the beginning of the book, she talks a little bit about the differences between mental health and mental illness. And I think it's important that we do talk about this a lot in our field and just in general as we're trying to break the stigma. Because I do think a lot of the times when you think about mental health and mental illness, people put those things together. And that's not the case, which she points out. And so she notes that mental health is typically how are you doing psychologically or emotionally, right? And then mental illness, on the other hand, kind of refers to when your mental health is compromised or neglected for too long, and you kind of start to notice that it's affecting your ability to focus or function in your everyday life. So that means that you can't do things that you used to do or that you enjoy to do. And sometimes we can't see the world around us like we used to as well. So for example, if you're really, really struggling with depression, you may notice that you're not engaging in the hobbies that you care about anymore. Your thinking is extremely negative, and you may struggle with a lot of self-doubt and self-esteem issues. The way that you perceive the world is really different. And so that's where you can kind of notice that you might be dealing with a little bit more of the mental illness part of it, and your mental health is struggling a little bit, right? And so she does talk about how mental illness kind of covers a whole bunch of different conditions like depression, anxiety, eating disorders, personality disorders, neurological disorders. There's so many different types of mental health issues or mental illnesses. So part of the process is trying to figure out the difference between, okay, is this something that I just need help with, or is it something that I fully have a diagnosis with and I need to get diagnosed and then get the help? So either way, you're getting some help, but is it like, you know, preventative stuff to help you prevent completely having a diagnosis, becoming to a place where you're debilitated, or is it something that's like, I'm really struggling or there's a chemical imbalance and I need to get some extra help, right? So I like that she kind of helps break this down a little bit. And like I said, I think when I first started my journey with mental health, I think having a book like this would have been so helpful, because I was at a place where my mental health was being compromised and I was struggling with mental illness a little bit, in the sense I was really struggling with depression and anxiety. But I also recognize now that a lot of it was situational and I needed to, you know, get a better grasp of like, how do I cope with these different situations in a way that will promote my mental health and help me be in a good place emotionally. And so that took a lot of time and energy and work, but now I'm a little better with it and I can bounce back a little bit better. But, you know, obviously I'm still in therapy and doing my tune-ups all the time to make sure I stay in a good headspace. But again, I think kind of understanding some of this in the beginning would have been very helpful for me as I was trying to navigate what it looks like to have good mental health. So the next part that stuck out to me was this idea of, how do you know that you need help versus that you need to you have a diagnosis or that you need to be evaluated for a diagnosis? And I think this chapter was really good because it really helped you kind of understand, like, you as an individual do not necessarily have to meet the criteria for having a mental illness to get help. So sometimes you can go to therapy just to get some extra set of ears in a way to kind of process what's going on. So let's say if you're embarking on a new journey of, like, maybe you're moving, you're entering a new relationship, or you're learning how to put boundaries with your family for the first time, things like that, or you're just processing anxiety of being like one a first generation immigrant, as an example, you know, all these different things. You can go and talk to a therapist and work that stuff out with a therapist, and you don't fully have to be diagnosed with a mental illness for that to happen, right? And so I think that is something that I, again, love that she brings that up, because I know when I first started going to therapy too, I was navigating some of that stuff, especially both of my parents were doctors or are doctors, and like they were licensed in Costa Rica and they came to this country and they had to do some things a little different, eventually did nursing. But I know from an early age, the bar was high in my house. And so there was no question of you're going to school, you're going to college, you're probably going to become a doctor. Like, those are the things that they had set for me. So there was a lot of pressure. There was a lot of performance anxiety. There was a lot of depression. There's a lot of things I was navigating. And then when I started realizing, like, the doctor thing wasn't going to be for me, the extra pressure and all these different things, and even figuring out how to put up boundaries with my family was very difficult for me initially. And so I feel like me trying to navigate how to do all these different pieces on my own was just adding to the depression and anxiety that I was experiencing. So a big part of me having to learn how to cope with this was recognizing, like, I need help. I have no idea what I'm doing. And that, because I was in the psychology major, I was a psychology major in undergrad, I was open to therapy because I was basically in a major that was normalizing it a little bit more for me, but still taking that initial step was like, oh God, like, what am I doing? Right. And so I think, you know, again, knowing and having this book and even having this experience in my life, I was recognizing, like, hey, it's okay to go to talk to somebody, even if you're not fully diagnosed with something on paper. And so that was one of the big things that I ended up doing and ended up being very beneficial for me. And so I like that she helps just address that question. And it's not saying that, you know, at the end of the day, being diagnosed with something, there's nothing wrong with that either. It's, I think one of the things that I tell my patients as well is, just because you're diagnosed with something, it doesn't define you as a person. It helps you understand yourself a little bit more. It helps you maybe make sense of how to navigate things a little bit more on your day to day, but it doesn't mean like you are your diagnosis. Like, even myself, I'm like, yeah, I deal with depression, but depression is not NEF. Like, I don't define myself by depression. I know there's some ways that I have to think about things or approach things or deal with things, just having that in mind that I do struggle with it from time to time, but it doesn't define me as a person, right? And so that's something that I think is such an important thing to be reminded of as you're seeking help. It's okay to have these different things to help understand who you are as a person, but it doesn't mean that's who you are as a person only. Right. And so I thought that was something that, you know, is really cool that she kind of helps break down a little bit more. And she's, you know, and so she even notes that, you know, it's so important for us to not limit people because of their diagnosis and say, hey, or even if you don't have a diagnosis, to limit you from getting treatment. Because I do think that's another thing that's a struggle with our field, is that if somebody is not fully diagnosed and it can't be billable by our insurance or whatever the case may be, sometimes it may add some limitations to, like, how much help you can get sometimes because of that, which is also something that we kind of have to work on as a field. And I love that she brings that up. So some of the other things that stood out to me, I love that she took the time to write down some things about knowing if you're seeing a good therapist or a bad therapist. And so I think, as I was processing this a little bit, using the word bad therapist kind of feels a little rough sometimes, but it's, I mean, sometimes you are literally seeing a bad therapist, but I think there's also the understanding of like, maybe the therapist is good, but not a good fit. So I think there's that as well. But she does use a bad therapist. And so I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about some of those and, you know, talk about some of my experiences to kind of end the segment or end the a little bit about like what stood out to me. And so some of the signs that you are seeing a bad therapist, one, she says that they don't remember any of the important things you have told them. Two, they talk about themselves and their issues most of the session. Three, they downplay your struggles or concerns, and you feel you have to prove how badly you are doing. Four, they don't have healthy boundaries and allow you to contact them 24/7. Five, there is no end of therapy in sight. They don't have any goals or a treatment plan they are following to ensure you are moving in the right direction. Six, they tell you what to do instead of listening to your thoughts and feelings about your issue. And seven, they cancel all the time and you don't feel like you're a priority. So I do understand like there is a point where you're like, okay, this therapist is really not good. And I will say with these seven, for the most part, I feel like this really boils down to how, if they're being like ethical with you. And that's where you can definitely tell that they're not being a good therapist. And so even saying things like, you know, saying things about themselves too much, like it's like you're not besties. They're supposed to be a soundboard, right, for you to be able to talk to and for them to help you process stuff and ask you questions and things like that. So I thought that was really important to note. Definitely, if they're not remembering important things you told them, yikes. I know for me, because my brain is all over the place sometimes, I'm even mindful about taking a few little notes about the important things people share with me, because I want to make sure next time we talk, I'm not like, oh God, like, you know, what did we talk about again? Like, so I think it's such an important part of the field to make sure we're somewhat aware of like what is going on with our patients so we can build on that, right? Definitely the downplaying your struggles was a big woof for me when I read that, because I know, again, especially if you're dealing with depression, anxiety, or certain things, and it's a big deal to you. So if your therapist is not helping you validate your feelings and really validate what's going on, even if they don't understand why you're feeling the way that you're feeling, huge yikes. And I know for me personally, as I've been in the therapy space right now, that's something I'm very thankful for my therapist, that he's helped me be okay with validating feelings that I have, especially since I'm not used to always giving myself the space and the grace to feel my emotions so intensely, and also not judge myself for the emotions that I'm feeling, right? And so I know one of the biggest things that I've loved with working with him is that he is really good about being like, yeah, it's okay to feel anxious about this. It's okay to be angry about this. And especially as a Black woman, I know it's been very freeing because I don't always feel safe and protected and okay to voice my concerns or voice my fears or voice whatever it is. And so to have a space where somebody's validating that is so freeing, right? And I think that's something that hopefully a good therapist will try to do for you and with you, is giving you that space to feel validated and loved and free and all that stuff. And if you're not having that, I do think that's a good red flag. So I love that she brings that up. And then the healthy boundaries thing, definitely you do want, I mean, I know my therapist sometimes will say, hey, if you need to do an extra session, whatever, like there's just certain things that he okays, but for the most part, we know we talk once a week, this is a healthy boundary, et cetera. So that's good. I think the one thing that kind of stood out to me here, so I think it's good to make sure that you are evaluating if you have like certain goals or treatment plans or different things and making sure you're on the right step. And you kind of have to determine with your therapist when it is a good time to terminate and things like that. But I know in my particular case, for me right now, I don't know if there's an ending in my therapy in sight. So that was the only one here that was like, oh, interesting. But I will say that is mainly because for me as a therapist and as a person that, you know, happens to be a Black woman that deals with mental, like depression, I should say, and anxiety and different things, like it's been helpful for me to have a safe space and a sounding board, especially as a therapist, because there's so much that I'm carrying of other people's situations and their emotions and different things. So I'm very mindful to make sure I'm in a good, healthy headspace so I can help somebody else carry their stuff. So I know for me personally, I don't know if there's going to be an end in therapy in sight for sure. I know there is a point though that, you know, me and my therapist had talked about just meeting every other week for like maintenance type of stuff. It wasn't every week because I was in a space where things were a little slower. There wasn't a lot going on. I was okay. And then after a while, we talked about once a week again, just because things were picking up again. So I think those are conversations that you will always have to have with your therapist to kind of figure out if there's a beginning and an end and what that looks like. But that kind of stood out to me a little bit because I was like, yeah, I don't know if there's an end in sight for me. But that's also because like, that's what I need at right now. Maybe in the future, you know, things will change and we can kind of, you know, gauge that as we go. But I will say I know with certain therapies and certain things that you're doing. So if you're working on trauma, there might be like a period of time where you're like, these are the goals that I want to do for my trauma work. And then it's going to have a beginning and an end, right? But then there might be some other situations, like I said, with mine, where for now, there's not really an end in sight because it's been something that's been helping me be a healthy person for myself, my family, and my patients and things like that. So let's move on to how do we know if we're seeing a good therapist? So I like that she puts, you feel like they're on your side rooting for you. And I know with my therapist, I definitely see that. They clearly communicate what they are doing. They listen to your thoughts very well. They challenge you to do more, try harder, and push past what you used to think you could accomplish. They give you advice that describes how you are feeling. They validate your experience. They check on your progress. They make sure you feel like you're moving towards your goals at a good pace. Again, just to talk a little bit about my experiences, I know, like I said, not necessarily have an end in sight right now, but these qualities I know I've seen in my therapist very, very often, almost every week, where he does do a good job of like validating my experiences, helping me push through some things, challenging me, especially, I know I tell people all the time with 2020, you know, obviously we had to stay home for a myriad of reasons for protection and, you know, safety of others, etc. But there was a point, especially since I'm more introverted, where I was leaning really into like not going out, and it was affecting my mental illness or my mental health, I should say. And so there was points where he had to be like, hey, did we go outside today? Did we go do stuff? And it was funny at the time because I would always be like, nope, I did not. But I recognized, you know, at the time or like after the fact, like even though I'm an introvert and I really enjoy resting and connecting with myself and reading and all these things, and I can, you know, be a homebody in a lot of ways, long term, spending too much time at home was not good for me, especially my home is not always the healthiest for me either. So part of, you know, him challenging me was like, hey, I know it's been hard. You're back home. All these different things are going on, but I need you to go outside. I need you to go do something. I need you to challenge yourself. So even parts of my challenges were, hey, like, even if you don't go with anybody, you know, go somewhere, like go get a drink somewhere, go sit somewhere, go outside, go on a walk. And I know one of my first challenges actually involved me. I wanted to go see a show, Wicked. And I initially asked my sister to go with me, and my sister wasn't able to go. So I ended up asking a coworker to go with me, and that ended up being really awesome. And so I think that's some of the ways that my therapist has helped me kind of step outside of like my unhealthy patterns and be like, hey, come on, let's get you out there. Let's go do something. Let's help you experience something. Don't wallow in, where you're at right now. And especially since right now I happen to be in a space where I'm living back at home. My family's not really great at respecting my boundaries all the time. I'm kind of isolated because my friends are like spread out all these different places, and figuring out what community looks like as an adult, especially since I'm still navigating my religious stuff right now. It's been a challenge. So again, having my therapist just be there to be a sounding board and helping me process things and helping me just figure out more or less where I want to be in the future or even in the present has been really, 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 really helpful. And I will say with this, one of the things that I had to recognize, especially as a person that works in this field, is that a lot of this required me to really be open and vulnerable and talk about the things that are happening in the current moment. Because I think one of the things I had to recognize and come to terms with and be honest about is that I have the ability to recycle and talk about things that I've already dealt with. But if you ask me to really be vulnerable about what's going on in my head today, what's going on in my head right now, a lot of the times I have a very hard time with that. And I think a lot of it is because of my upbringing and how me actually being vulnerable with my family has not always yielded to a good result or turned into me getting positive feedback and validation and things like that. So automatically, if I feel some inkling of, you know, sadness or vulnerability or like, you know, hey, I need to share this, I automatically withdraw and I don't want to do it. And so one of the things after a few weeks of recognizing this pattern with my therapist, I kind of like had to stop a minute. I was like, okay, is this working with my therapist? Like, am I actually growing with my therapist? Am I actually doing well with my therapist? And I kind of went back and forth about, okay, is this a conversation where we have to decide, hey, we got to break up because this isn't working for me anymore or what? And so as I was reflecting on this too, part of me was like, Neff, but you're not really being honest with this man. You go and see him every week and you're not actually telling him how you're feeling. You're telling him about how you felt last week. You tell him about other things, but you're not really telling him about what you're feeling. And so I know for me, with my therapist, that was kind of a game changer where I had to honestly say, hey, I come here every week and I'm not really telling you what I'm feeling. So I want to challenge myself to actually tell you what I'm feeling so that I can see what's going on and actually work through stuff. And so, you know, that was a hard step for me. And then actually having to follow through, like it was not fun, but I started to notice like, as I was doing that more, not only was I growing or am I growing now as a person, my relationship with my therapist actually changed a little bit more because I was actually giving him a chance and an opportunity to show up for me. And I would even say like, you know, one of the things is recognizing like, you know, sometimes those actions that we do, especially for me in this instance, is like a protective measure. I kind of expect a lot of the times that people aren't going to show up for me. So I don't even give them a chance to show up for me. And then it kind of becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy that, hey, look, you're not showing up for me. But it's like, bitch, you didn't even give them a chance, right? So that's something that I will say that, you know, when you're thinking about how to figure out if this is a good person for me or whatever, like actually give them a chance to show up and see what it is. And if it really comes down to like, hey, this person isn't a good fit for me, and I did my best to give them a chance to show up for me for real, not that you're testing them, but like that you're just being real and honest with them and kind of seeing if it's a real fit. If you really have to say, hey, this isn't working, like, don't be afraid to do that. Because I think even though it can be somewhat of a hard conversation, yes, there's going to be some sadness and some things. At the end of the day, if your therapist really cares about you and about your mental health, they're going to see you through it and it's going to be okay. And if they don't do a good job of seeing you through the process, then sweetie, that person wasn't for you to begin with, right? Because I even think about people that I care about. If there's something I have to adjust or change, or even if it means like letting them go, at the end of the day, because I care about them so much, I'm willing to do those things because I, at the end of the day, want what's best for you. And not, it's not just about me. It's about you too, right? And so that's what you want to look for in your therapist. So, I mean, I could be here all day talking about this book. But to end, I wanted to just share a quote that they put in here that I thought was really cool. This is by a person named Mandy Hale. And so she quotes her saying, "Growth is painful, change is painful, but nothing is as painful as staying stuck somewhere you don't belong." And so I love this quote. I think this is such a great way to kind of end this podcast to help you kind of think about, hey, do you need therapy? Are you okay? Like the book says. And if you're like me, there's going to be points where you're like, no, hell no, I'm not okay. But I do think this quote is absolutely correct that, you know, sometimes we do have to move and change and grow. And there is going to be some work, some pain, some discomfort, a lot of discomfort. But I think the worst thing we can do for ourselves is just stay in the rut that we're in, stay in the position that we're in, and stay in a place where we're unhappy, right? And I will say, even as I'm saying this right now, I'm kind of in a season right now where I'm just going through a lot of stuff and, you know, just processing again, like, all my people are outside of the state, except like a few. I had to let go of a relationship last year that I'm still processing. Her birthday was like recently. And I ended up having to wrestle with the fact that at the time I was kind of more okay with it and I accepted it. But a year later near her birthday, I'm like sad as fuck. And I'm like, what the hell is this? So there's just so much. And then work. Some days I love my job. And I will say I truly enjoy working with my patients, but there's parts of the system as a whole that's like, what the fuck is this? And there's days where I don't really feel respected there and things like that. So it's just navigating all these different things. And I know I had to process with my therapist. It's how difficult it is to be like, you know, not heard at home, not respected at home, and then going to a work environment where a lot of times I don't feel heard or respected either, and then coming home and being lonely. And there's just so much, right? But at the end of the day, I'm recognizing too, like as I'm growing and learning how to voice my needs and figure out what it looks like to find some version of happiness or be happy, I still have had moments of that. I know a few weeks ago, there was moments where I was like, I'm genuinely happy in some of the areas of my life, even though there's a bunch of, you know, dog shit being slung at me in other areas. But I've had a lot of moments of happiness. But a big part of that is because I've been willing to grow and change and voice things. And I will say, like, in one example is I ended up going on a trip with a guy friend to Oregon, which a black person going to Oregon, yeah, it's different. But being over there with him, there was a sense of freedom that I felt that I was like, I love this. We went to Portland, we went to Seaside, and being on the West Coast, I haven't been on the West Coast in a long time. I was on the West Coast when I was a kid, and then I went maybe 5 years ago or so for a wedding briefly in the Washington State area. But I hadn't been on the West Coast in a while. So actually going with him, doing something different, challenging myself to go on a trip with a guy friend even, was awesome, you know. And there were moments on the trip where I was like, ugh, because I know the night I got there was like 10 o'clock at night, but the first full day, there was police brutality that I witnessed. And there were some moments where like I was followed around in the store when we went together to figure out if he wanted a hat or something. Like, so there were some moments on the trip that I was like, ugh, whatever. You know, like I wasn't thrilled about it. But the rest of the time, like, it was just such a good breath of fresh air to be around somebody that I felt genuine love and respect for. And he did a really good job of just like helping me feel safe and protected. He was thinking about things before I even thought about them, especially with, you know, being in a predominantly white area like that. There's moments where he was more aware of, okay, the Neff is going to be treated differently over here. Let me be aware of this, you know. And I was just able to just freely be me. We tried hiking. Well, I tried hiking for the first time. And there was some anxiety, obviously, and some uncomfortability, but it was awesome at the same time, just doing something different, experiencing something different. So much so that I was like, I don't even want to go back home. And obviously, long term, like, I don't want to like live in Oregon for a lot of reasons, but it was an opportunity to just do something new and challenge myself. And I had a really great time. And so I do think that is something that I am thankful for, that I have taken the time to really learn about myself, built up my mental health, built up some of my community. And so I feel freer to challenge and try new things, even in the midst of like some fears and anxiety, right? And so that's something that I want to encourage for all of you as well, right? That we take the time, no matter what your situation is looking like, no matter what your issues are, whether it is you want to do something preventative, whether it is you're, you know, desperately dealing with some mental illness and you really want to address those things, do not feel bad about taking time for yourself to do those things. Because I do think the more we prioritize ourselves and the more we prioritize just, you know, putting up the boundaries that we need, putting the things we need in place for our self-care, the better we are as people, the happier we are as people, and even the better we can show up for ourselves and others, honestly. And I will say, even with me doing stuff for my mental health, it's also translated for me to be more open to doing stuff for my general health. So taking care of my brain, taking care of what my emotional stuff, I've been able to challenge myself to even, you know, promote like, okay, how can I go work out a little bit, you know, during the week and prioritize feeling good about my body and all these other things too, right? And that has looked like, you know, me and a coworker, we did Hard 75 where we were exercising every day for a bit, eating right, you know, just prioritizing me taking care of myself for an hour every day. And that was really great. You know, if you asked 18-year-old me if I would be able to fucking do that, I would have laughed. But, you know, me figuring out, again, some of my mental health stuff helped me be open to figuring out some of my health stuff a little bit more. And now I'm at a place where I feel a little bit more confident in myself and in my body. I mean, there's still insecurities that I'm still working through, but I am a little bit more confident. I'm a little bit more willing to stand up for myself, practice self-love, and even like not be as hard on myself about like, hey, you're human. You can feel. You're human. It's okay to have a bad week. It's okay to own that. And even for me, a big step is even noticing like I am very sensitive. I am very emotional. I love really hard and very deeply, and that's okay. And obviously, there's going to be days where I have that I'm not so good at accepting and loving that about myself. But because I have had the right people in my spot, including my therapist, I can go to them and be like, okay, I'm shitting on myself this week, or I'm not doing well with myself this week. And they can feed into me and help me challenge my fears, challenge my thoughts, and just help me get back on the right page. And so you, my listener, I want that for you, you know. And so I hope that, you know, you'd be more willing after me talking about this a little bit more to pick up this resource if you are not sure where to start with anything. And even if you do know where to start with stuff, I think this is a good resource in general to just have so that you can learn more about maybe certain things that you're not aware of. I know even for me, it helped me think about some things that I wasn't aware of. But yeah, get out there and don't be afraid of change and growth, even if it's painful, like this quote says, because I think the more and more we get used to being stuck in situations that make us unhappy, in situations that, you know, really decrease our mental health, the harder it is for us to function and to be present for ourselves and even others. So on that note, I thank you all so much for listening to this episode of Critical Reads, the podcast, and I hope that you have a great day wherever you are, or night. Hey there, and thank you for joining me on this week's episode of Critical Reads. To find out more about me or to consume more of my content, please feel free to visit my website, soulsessionswithneff.com, where I share a variety of things, including blog posts, resource lists, and have a regularly updated calendar for this podcast. You can also follow me on Instagram and Facebook using the handle @soulsessionswithneff. While you're at it, if you really enjoy listening to Critical Reads, I encourage you to please subscribe to this show on iTunes, Google, or Spotify, and take some time to rate us on these different platforms. Your reviews will really help the show gain some visibility and also give me some much needed feedback on how the show is doing. I thank you in advance for your time and your support. And until next time, this has been Neff with some Critical Reads.